This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
What's up, everyone? Welcome back to an all-new season of Coffee and Commerce. Super excited to be with my co-host and the legend himself, Mr. Gary Vaynerchuk.
Thank you, Zubin. It's great to see you. You're looking good, cleanly shaved, looking fresh. I'm excited to be back for season two. I know we have a big-time guest. And, you know, the e-commerce world continues to evolve in such a fun way, in an important way, and I'm excited to be here with you.
Likewise. So to kick things off, given where we are from a macro standpoint, there are talks of recession. We've got capital tightening in the marketplace. So we want to bring as much value as possible. So we decided who better to bring than someone whose company crushed it in the last economic downturn, in the last economic uncertainty, Scott Boylan, CEO of Allstar. So we're going to bring Scott in right now. Scott's company created the Snuggie, perhaps the biggest hit of the last recession. So there's a ton to learn from him.
I love that. I'm excited to have him here. And real quick, while he's coming on board, just want to say what's up to Cody Bell and to Samuel Miller and to Scott Gilbert and to Dustin Ruther and TC. I mean, the Susan on LinkedIn, Thomas McHugh. So a lot of fun. A lot of people in the comments. We see you. I see you. I want to say what's up. Thank you so much. Mark Russell. Good to see you. Morgan Owen Bowler Brown. That was a mouthful. Robert Hill's a lot easier. Great to see all of you. Thanks for being here. And let's bring him in because you're right. The Snuggie really is a case study that I personally admire.
What's going on, guys?
What's up, brother?
Scott.
All good. All good.
I also admire Scott's gun. Scott, you work out, huh, bro? You threw the shirt, bro.
I appreciate it. We do what we can.
Zubin, take us away.
Scott, great to have you. Like I said at the onset, so with the economic uncertainty that we're in right now, we want this episode to be focused on innovating and not just innovating, but selling and making money during economic uncertainty. So we got Scott Boylan, CEO of Allstar, the company behind the Snuggie. Welcome, Scott.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So, Scott, take us back. Many of us, last time we had economic uncertainty, massive economic uncertainty, 07, 08, the one product that came out and was a case study for pretty much everyone about how to innovate when there are downturns, how to create products that consumers want, and how to make money in any environment. And everyone kept talking about the Snuggie. And this is your first interview or first podcast ever talking about the Snuggie. So we're super excited for that. Tell us about that journey.
No, it was really interesting. So it was about 2008. And I get asked all the time because it was one of the first viral campaigns, right? And how did you create that? And they call me up and it's a pretty easy answer. We didn't create anything. I still don't believe you could create a total virality. But you got, as I always say, we didn't light that fire. We were smart enough to blow on it. But when you really look at the Snuggie and like, how do you make money in a downturn? You almost have to peel it back a few years. Because I think companies that say, okay, there's a downturn, now we're going to seize on opportunities. It's really strong companies that are sustainable and understand how to win, and profit wins, right? So all these companies that come into these downturns, they're usually growth companies and high-level companies. And when a problem happens, they have none of the fundamentals and none of the strategies to succeed. So, you know, we had a bumpy ride up, right? It was, you know, we're a self-funded company. We started it, you know, did everything from 2-3 people. At that point, we probably had 40. And by the end of it, we had 60. So we had grown every part of that company and every penny mattered, from sourcing to logistics to finance to how we marketed. And when 2008, 2009 happened, we were just opportunistic, right? And I can fast forward to today. What happened then is big companies, and I don't understand this, media drops half the rate and they run away because there's a recession. So media blows wide open. So we just happen to have the right product at the right time and we don't pick them. Like, I don't see a recession coming and say, okay, we got to jump all over that. We have a detailed testing model. We test hundreds of items. We put them on TV. We test them on web. We test them all over the place and the consumer decides. So we just happen to have the right product at the right time that made people feel good. Now, why did it blow up? Because we were good at everything else. We were able to make $1 million a week. We had relationships at Walmart that got the front of the store. We knew how to run TV and we knew how to jump all over it. wasn't hard. I mean, we don't have to be mathematicians that when we buy Meteor in July for a blanket and then it's half the price in November, it's going to triple in response and quadruple. So just everything worked in that time to make that win. And I always say profit wins, right? So if you're really driving and driving towards a profitable company, when bad times happen, you have the strength to succeed.
Smart. Yeah, no, it's really funny listening to that. Direct mail, radio, print, you know, television in the 60s and 70s, remnant TV, cable TV, Google AdWords is how I did it. TikTok is how some people are doing it today. It's always the same story in different versions, which is you have actual operators that know where the consumer attention is. They take advantage of an arbitrage. He just explained perfectly his, which was, we were agnostic. If the math works, the math works. And when Coca-Cola and BMW go away because they're not real, you know, they're executives. Like, that's just the truth at the end of the day. They're executives, and your entrepreneurial practitionership gave you that advantage. And when I, you know, Zubin, when I look at the comments and looking here, right, so many more people can associate with that story. Now, they may not have the budgets to do it on TV the way he did, but they can do that today, right this second, on YouTube Shorts for no media exposure. The virality's there. People don't recognize the moment. And I think when listening to that, that was a big story of recognizing the moment.
Yeah. And it's about chasing the wind, right? So you have to be nimble enough to see these opportunities and big enough to take advantage of them. But like Gary just said, small companies can still take advantage of them also. You just have to see where they are and be nimble enough to react to them and have all of your foundational principles right, and then just lean in. I think some of these times are better to lean in. There's going to be brands out there to bought right now. There's a lot of headwinds out there, but there's still tremendous opportunities.
You know, the other thing that struck a chord with me, Scott, and what you mentioned was profitability. And I think that the reason why Gary and I started working with one another to begin with was because that's the thing that we connected on, which was so many of these direct-to-consumer brands. And it's not to say it's a bad thing. It took VC funding, private equity funding, whatnot. And so the goal of that organization is not necessarily to make money. In fact, it's oftentimes not to make money at the cost of user acquisition or new customers. And now, fast forward where we are right now, we're seeing it in the market. Companies aren't getting financing unless they're profitable. And we're back to these business fundamentals that had almost been forgotten over the past few years. Talk to us a little bit about how you maintained and still do with your other products profitability, even when something is blowing up as fast as it is.
So we advertise a little different than a lot of companies. We're a complete ROAS model. We're old school as seen on TV. We actually started off in direct mail, freestanding inserts, credit card things. We use advertising to fund our, basically, we use advertising to fund the campaign like anybody else. But we may spend $10 million and we make $8 million back in profit. So in fact, that advertising only cost us $2 million. So we had an 80% return on ad spend. So yeah, the way we do it on a direct-to-consumer basis and providing value that way, direct shipping and having every cost and everything line allows us to run triple the media of another company, maybe five times the media of another company. I mean, you just brought up something interesting to me because, you know, 5 years ago, if I wasn't so strong in my convictions, I would have thought I was a dinosaur that was getting extinct because I would go to trade shows and I had kids and I would say they're kids because they were 21 years old and I'm not, right? And they would tell me retail's dead. And I said, you guys, I've been doing this a long time. One thing you have to know is there's two things. There's a pendulum that shifts all over the place. You have to be selling all places. We learned a long time ago, you can't tell your consumer where to buy. You have to be where they want to buy. Now, that's not everybody's model, but that's our model. So to not be at retail, so many of these companies were all over Facebook, Instagram. Well, what happens? iOS 14, and their one channel gets shut down.
That's right. You have
to be everywhere right now and let your consumer have that. The other thing that happened, I was with a group, and I really thought it was an interesting opportunity for us to partner on brands. And they told me my model is broken. We will never be able to sell anything. We will never build a brand for one reason. We make profit, and that's crushing our valuations.
That's ridiculous.
I was like, you have, and this was a guy from Harvard, worked at one of the biggest banks, raised a ton of money on this spectrum. I go, I've just seen this over too many years. That's early day internet. That's early profit wins. Sustainable businesses win. And that's what we're seeing right now.
I mean, it really goes back to it. Right? I mean, it's real. I mean, again, I think we're all kind of like high-fiving here, but like, it's exciting. I want everybody to hear this. Like, in what world could a simple statement as profit is bad be real? Of course there's, I don't invest. Here's where profit can be bad if somebody wants to be a stickler. You're taking all the money out of the business to buy Corvettes and boats, and you're not doing the right thing by the business. And eventually the golden goose dies, oftentimes by a second generation operator, whether it's a family business or a different, fine. But other than that, to your point, the logic around this, it makes me laugh how people don't understand tried and true things are real. We have this almost infatuation to make up new variables when some of this, like, I'll give you a great one. Somehow people have decided hard work is not part of the equation. You know, like, people like to razz me, like, Gary, you go too hard. I'm like, no. I say, if you want something extraordinary, you've got to put in the work. For some reason, back to the nice compliment I gave you, when we see muscles, and of course there's steroids and HGH, I get it, but like, there's work. And like, I hear people like, Gary, you don't get it. I don't work hard, I work smart. I'm like, cool, I work hard and smart, now what? Like, you know, like people try to reinvent truths, like work ethic. I am the number one fucking fan on earth of mental health. I am the least anxious. I literally wake up kissing the world because I'm grateful for the lack of anxiety. I sleep 8 hours a day. I believe in it the most. I'm all about all these things. Yet, just because I believe in work ethic, people try to paint a fake narrative and try to actually debate me on this notion. I've got a big news alert for everybody. Hard work ethic is part of the equation towards outsized success. It's part of the equation. The end. And profit, to your point, like, when did not making money sound like a good idea? I will never understand that.
No, it's insane. I lectured. I didn't lecture. I've never really lectured. Like, this is my first podcast. I was asked to guest speak at Syracuse University at their entrepreneurship program. It's probably 12 years ago around Snuggie. And somebody asked me, what's your key to being an entrepreneurial success? And I said, you know, no one's ever asked me that before. So just give me 1 second. I said, here's the only thing I can tell you. If you're in a room with 100 other entrepreneurs, I can guarantee you there are smarter people than you. I can also guarantee you you'll be the hardest working person there. And if you are, you will find success. You just have to find your path.
This is very important. Brian M. goes, so how do you keep a good work ethic without getting burned out? Two things pop to my mind. I'd love to hear from you both because you've had your successes and they're real. One, when you genuinely love the thing you're doing, you're playing.
Yeah.
Like I'm not doing it for the money. I'm doing it because I like being an entrepreneur the way people like sailing and eating pizza and watching movies and playing golf. So that's one way. This is why I've always loved passion. Number two, here's a big one. I love it the most, comma. If I wake up and it's raining outside and it's just kind of a shitty day, I'm okay with having an off day, off week, off month on the grind. Because I'm not going to judge myself in a nanosecond of a 60-year career. And so it's about having a relationship of self-love that you don't beat yourself up if you've had a bad quarter, let alone a bad day. Thoughts, man?
So you're definitely more evolved than me, you know, because I love some of the things you're saying. I think, you know, somebody gave me a compliment the other day that I took as a –
insult?
No, it wasn't an insult. It was a self-reflection. Somebody said, oh, Scott's still working. And the other guy goes, he hustles like he's 25 years old and doesn't have a penny to his name. And some of that is a little bit true, and maybe it's too true. Some of it's fear of losing. Some of it's love of winning, right? And I do love what I do, and I want to achieve. And now we're partnering with a lot of smaller brands. And I will tell you, some of the youth there, I mean, I live for energy. I feed off energy, right? Yeah. So some of these younger kids that are building brands have such, well, they have one thing for them and one thing against them. They have tremendous positivity. And I love that. But they don't have a plan, right? So you need, everybody has a thing. So positivity with a plan, we're help putting a plan around them. So working with them to do things that we've never been good at really just focusing on that brand and microing that brand and putting it on our platform really, really gives me energy. But I'll do this 25 more years.
Liz goes, I know he caters to the young people, but a 60-year-old, I love this guy. I just want everybody to know on the record, since I've got this great opportunity with Liz, I surely do not cater to the young. I think what you're seeing, how old are you, my friend?
Liz or me?
Yeah, you.
55.
Right. 55, 46, and we are young here because we like it. I cater to that energy, not what the birth certificate says. I think because of the platforms I put out content, I'm not doing Shark Tank, I'm doing TikTok. Sure, it looks like it to the young, but I'm catering to the practical optimists. And if you listen to what he just said, they have the youth and excitement, but they don't have the plan. I'm obsessed with optimism. When people hear optimism, they think delusion. I don't. I think optimism is actually the single most practical human trait to being an entrepreneur, but it has to be grounded in reality. When I have people roll up to me and being like, I'm gonna be a billionaire, I'm like, cool. And my next question is how? Like, well, I'm gonna grind for it. I'm like, that's not going to be it. Like, and so like, you know, those are the conversations.
Yeah, I love it. I would think some of the younger people, you know, and maybe that I was like this when I first started out, but they're so linear, right? Here's my plan. And this A's going to happen, B's going to happen, C's going to happen, and I'm going to be a billionaire. Or these are the five steps I'm going to do in my career. I'm going to work here. I'm going to go to this bank. I'm going to go here. And I'm like, you're like a stick in a stream, right? You're going to get dropped in there. And I think your positivity and you're smart as can be, you're going to get to the bottom. But if you don't realize you're going to bounce off all these rocks and let that stream take you, you're going to get stuck. Right. And so I think that's the energy you need, but you got to be able to be nimble and flow.
And it's because they don't have the experience, so they don't have the pattern recognition to go, last time I tried to do this and go linearly, I had to go left and right and forward and backwards, and it's totally fine with that. So the thing I was going to mention earlier, I think for both of you, having spent time with both of you, the reason why you have that work-life balance or whatever you want to call it is because you enjoy what you do and you're helping other people as you do it. In conversations with Scott, he's always mentioned to me, like, disproportionately give to the people that work for you versus like what you're taking. Gary, I mean, I've been working now for Gary for the last 3 years, and I cannot say enough great things about him. But one of the things I'll tell you is he surrounded himself with people that are kind and want to help. And more importantly, do this not only for their own benefit, but to benefit him. And I think that's a really important point in terms of partnerships, to find those people that you want to win.
It's all the same thing, right? There's a guy in the comments right now saying, DJT Love goes, stop lying, you guys, this is full of shit. He goes, you all didn't hustle, you guys got lucky. And I think a lot about the makeup of that comment and like really believing in that. Life is so about perspective. When you talk, you were just talking and he was commenting and I was thinking, I'm like, man, when I, you know, Zubin, you know, under the hood, but like when we're here, this is public and I'm very empathetic to people being cynical or like not fully trusting. We live in a very complex world. And I think it's so practical to be optimistic and give to others. Cause I really think when you do, good things happen to you. I just actually think it's very logical. But I was also raised by an optimistic mother. My father was raised by a pessimistic mother, and he's more like my friend in the comments here. You guys got lucky, it's cynical, it's a jealousy and envy framework. And I don't see that as a bad thing. I don't get mad at that comment. I actually have deep compassion for it. The reason I like to do this, the reason I say yes to this show, why I wanted to be on today is we're like, if one, you know, when he says you're sell it, I have nothing to sell. Like this is, I don't, there's no mastermind, there's no marketing class, like there's nothing to sell. It's the idea of if one person watching right now, Alex T, Rick Williams, Derek Baker, if one human hears any one of us three say something in a way they have never heard it before, or how about this, my favorite one, say something they've heard 13 times before, but today, Wednesday, September 7th, 2022 at 4:36 Eastern, 1:36 Pacific was the exact moment they were ready to fucking hear it and go, you know what? I have been excuse oriented, or I have been, you know, not accountable, or I haven't taken advantage of the arbitrages of what these guys are talking about. then that's like the best feeling, because the emails I get from people saying this video in 2016 changed the course of my life and my family's life is way more delicious than another zero in my bank account.
You know, so he says you got lucky, right? So in some ways you could say he's right. Right. But you put yourself in more positions to be lucky. And that goes back to the grind. Right. You know, I Snuggie was lucky. We had the right product at the right time. We were able to take advantage of it. We had 50 failures before that. Right. So you have to keep grinding it out and putting yourself in position and building that platform. So in some ways he's right. There's some luck involved, I would guess.
I would argue any human being watching this right now is obnoxiously lucky. Your parents have sex at the exact right second to make you a human being. 400 trillion to one modern scientist mathematical odds of being a human being. I don't want to hear a word from anybody's fucking mouth. Everyone's lucky. Your mom could have got up for another glass of wine and you wouldn't exist.
I agree.
I mean, that conversation is ridiculous. There's people who literally had a tree fall on their head today. Yeah. They were unlucky, right? I'm the luckiest. I was traded for wheat. I was born in the Soviet Union, a fucking shithole. And fucking was able to be traded for wheat because of a lucky moment in Cold War history. Ended up in America, the entrepreneurial heaven of all time, as an entrepreneur. I'm 100% lucky. Good. Now what? My big thing to my friends and acquaintances and strangers who use luck as a weapon to make themselves feel better is, okay, and now what? Did that make you feel better? Cool. We're all lucky. Now what?
I agree.
I don't know. So being you good? You're like taking that in, or what? You kind of.
I'm just taking it all in. Look, I totally agree with both of you. I think that there's luck in everything, but it's also, I think, it goes back to what you were mentioning about parents' upbringing and having a pessimistic outlook on things or an optimistic outlook on things. There was a gentleman, I think, whose comment just popped up that he's been making money for other people for many years and he's barely scraping by. Yeah. And what I'll say is that there are many ways to look at that. But one of the ways to look at that is if you can make money for one person, you can make money for a lot of people. And if you can make money for other people, make money for people who value you and allow you to make money alongside them.
100%.
And not this zero-sum game that I'm going to extract as much as I can from you.
I'm reading it too. I just saw his comment. I'm devastated. Working 16 and 18 hours a day for somebody else who's treating you like shit. But then my brain goes to like, fucking, you got to quit. You just like if you're in control, and that is like powerful to believe in. Like I say all the time to my friends, everybody here knows the last 15 years of politics have been decisive. I have had Democrat and Republican friends tell me, if this guy wins the election or if this girl wins the election, I'm moving to Canada. Meanwhile, every Republican and Democrat's still fucking here, right? But what I remind those friends when they're crying, when it's not their 4-year or 8-year era, I remind them, Sweden's available, New Zealand's open. You wanna be Bitcoined out? El Salvador's ready for you. Like, it's inconvenient. By the way, a lot of my friends moved to Miami to not pay taxes. Now they're moving back because they're bored because New York's back and open. I don't know. Like, you're in control. Do your fucking thing.
No, listen, you mentioned being an entrepreneur, right? And how you got lucky and everything. And that was, you know, a bunch of years ago. There's never been a better time in the history of the United States to be an entrepreneur. I mean, everything Shopify has democratized everything, going direct to the consumer. I mean, you talk about the great resignation. There are opportunities out there. I've seen kids make millions of dollars from their kitchen table just doing Amazon. When that started, I said, if I had a criticism of my company and myself, it's almost not being nimble enough, right? Yeah. We were on, as seen on TV, we missed early days Facebook, right? You're jumping on TikTok, we're a year too late, right? You got to be able to take advantage of the opportunities, and sometimes they're right in front of you. And you can do, I mean, the great thing I hear, you know, because I get so frustrated, Carrie, also some of the things you said, you know, work-life balance is great, but you still got to work, right? Doesn't mean it's just all balance, but I love this side hustle concept, right? That's the first time I started hearing about that is the last, you know, 7, 8, 9 years. And some of these kids are crushing it. They're working full-time jobs and they're building businesses on the side, and then they're taking them and they have businesses. And they did it from a kitchen table because you could do that these days, right? It comes down to big company, small company. What are your fundamentals? What's your path to profitability? You know, what's your plan? And then build from there. And that's in every segment of business that we go into or anybody goes into.
I think perspective is just incredible. Like once you have the emotional strength to have compassion for others, all these things, I think about it constantly. Like so much of why I'm so outward with my persona is because I can handle the negativity because I deal with it as not an indication to me, but I come from a place of gratitude that I'm not in that place and I want more good for them even when they're telling me I suck shit.
Yeah, and trying to plan your everything is impossible, right? And that's where you really just gotta roll. You asked about Snuggie, right? And we were the first viral campaign. There was barely any social media.
I want everybody to see what just happened. DGT Love just said, I apologize if I've offended anyone. I'm working the life out of me and I'm being drained. This is something I want everybody who's been watching to watch. I love this dude. And instead of what most people do on shows like this, when he was coming with the heat early on and somebody behind the scenes would have banned him or the public face that's paying attention like me would have shit on him, we come with real conversations and empathy. We had a conversation here for the last 10 minutes and look what it leads to. And this is the civility that this country desperately needs. We have to have, like, of course people should see the world differently. We come from different angles, different perspectives, but we have to have the capacity to not be in such conflict. And that's how you lead to great things in organizations, in governments, in families. And like, I'm excited about that. This like made my day, this GT Love post. It made my day.
Yeah, no one was offended. Like not one bit.
I know that if he's gonna come here and say the things he was saying, trying to hurt us, it means he was hurting.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, I know we got a little side off track. Here's what I would like to say. Because then I've got to bounce and you guys maybe can continue. The story of you just completely rocked me with my favorite thing. All the companies ran away. We ran towards it. And honestly, to tie in what we talked about for the last 10 minutes of mindset, in business and in life, the game is very simple. You either stare fear in the face or you run away from it. And I would argue that when the economy gets soft, and people run away, that is reacting to the fear. And then there are people like our fine man here who ran into the opportunity. I think with all the things we're talking about with mindset and perspective, it's either you are running away from the fear or you're understanding fear is not scary. We all lose, we all make mistakes. We failed, listen what he said. We failed 50 times. But, and that's, it's very real. And like, I don't know if there's a day that doesn't go by where I do tons of mistakes, dumb shit, big mistakes, sometimes a full year. I can think of 3 years in a row where I don't think I was at my best running this company. But the last 2 years being a fucking on fire closes all those gaps.
Now, and how much time do you think every time you fail?
Usually not very long, mainly because I don't value other people saying I'm good or I'm bad. Meaning the only thing that allows me to live my public life is when everyone says I'm the GOAT or I'm the best or you're a genius, I don't believe them either. I'm not a piece of shit, but I'm also not the greatest of all time. I'm just trying to do my thing out here and I stay down that middle.
But what I think I'm getting at is that you don't sit there and sulk about one thing after another. It's like, move on, get to the next thing, take that,
because
get
I'm
that
not, next because I'm not because I'm not looking to use sulking or excuses as a thing to propel me and prop me up in the eyes of my contemporaries.
Yeah, I like to take failure and say, okay, what did I learn from it? 100%. Right, and how did I get better from that? And how does that prepare? Luckily enough, we keep our failures to a minimum. That nothing's ever brought us down. You know, you mentioned, you know, and you surround yourself with good people. It helps because I'm an optimist by like they call scoptimism in my company, right? So I never see anything as bad, right? So I need somebody sometimes to say, hey, this isn't working, right? We need to take a look at what's happening here. I know you believe in it. I have a sign in my office that says never fall in love with a product, because I can't tell you how many teams I have, and six different times I'd redo their creative and change it.
I love that.
It sucks, right?
I love, I'm so the same way. Like, I always think I'm right, but in the face of being wrong, I'm like, fuck it, I'm wrong. And that humility, and like, I love that. Anyway, I got to run. I'll let you guys go and we'll talk soon. Thank you, brother. Thanks, Eric.